This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Spring break isn't what it used to be. It's better. This spring, stay 3 nights and get a $50 Best Western gift card. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Visit bestwestern.com for complete terms and conditions.
This episode is brought to you by Peloton. Break through the busiest time of year with the brand new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus. Powered by Peloton IQ. With real-time guidance and endless ways to move, you can personalize your workouts and train with confidence, helping you reach your goals in less time. Let yourself run, lift, sculpt, push, and go. Explore the new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus at onepeloton.com.
President's Day savings are happening now at the Home Depot with up to 40% off select appliances. Looking to upgrade your fridge? Check out LG's newest model, serving up ice in all kinds of styles. Cube, crushed, craft ice, and now new mini craft ice straight from the dispenser. From cold brew to fizzy favorites, these refrigerators will have you entertaining like a pro. Shop President's Day savings and get up to 40% off, plus free delivery on select appliances like LG at the Home Depot. Free delivery on appliance purchases of $1,498 or more. Offer valid February 5th through the 25th. U.S. only. See store online for details.
Hey guys, before we start, a quick shout out to Alpha Dog Nutrition for sponsoring this podcast. Alpha Dog products are now available at dusupply.com, and you can use code ALPHADOG15 at checkout for 15% off and a credit for free shipping to try it yourself. Now let's get you to your podcast.
Welcome to my podcast, where we are going to talk about a lifestyle with dogs and threw in a few life lessons along the way. Whether you're a hound hunter, bird dog enthusiast, running setters, pointers, retrievers, or a flat-out running dog junkie, this podcast is for you. I am your host, Heath Hyatt, a certified law enforcement canine trainer with over 3 decades of personal and professional training and handling experience. It's time for me to pay it forward. So grab your leads, lace up those boots, and come and join me on this lifelong process of teaching, training, and learning. Are you looking to unlock your dog's full potential and give them the best nutrition possible for peak performance? Then look no further. Anookshuk has what you're looking for. Anookshuk's nutrient-dense formulas are crafted to keep your dog's energy high and performance top-notch. Packed with premium proteins and essential fats, Anookshuk delivers the balanced nutrition your dog needs to thrive. From hunting dogs to police canines, Anookshuk is trusted by professionals. Give your dog the power of peak performance with Anookshuk Professional Dog Food. Welcome on in. We're going to call this one Winner Circle Wednesday instead of What's Up Wednesday, because we're all going to be winners today, right? Come home this evening, just checking the mail, and I got my new subscription to Southern Hound Hunting Magazine, and I was thumbing through it real quick, and, you know, I seen Andrew Bailey had a good article in there, about bears, and the cover is really good. And I seen that my good friend James Hudson with Hound's Tales Podcast had a good article in there and how he begun and about the podcast. So if you guys have not subscribed to it, you need to. It's got all kinds of hound hunting. It's not just catering to one particular realm of hound hunting. It's got them all in there. In fact, the cover's got two big old boars, and I don't want to misspeak. Looks like plot dogs. So hopefully that's what they are. But yeah, but James got an article in there, tickled to death for that. And if you guys don't have it, you need to subscribe. Subscribe to Bear Hunting Magazine. Subscribe to Full Cry. Jason and Danny are really putting their heart and soul in that magazine to bring it back to life. And I was actually reading, I was finishing up the book that Lester Nance had wrote. And I've got to do some research on this, because when I seen this in there, it kind of shocked me. But it was in the 1920s that they were talking about Full Cry magazine. So I'm really got to get up with Jason and find out when that magazine actually started. 1920s, guys. So we can't let stuff like that just go to the wayside. I prefer to read hard copies. I don't like reading off the internet or ebooks. So I've got a library of books. You guys have heard me talk about it before. So I like to read with something in my hand, because I may have to go back two or three times and read it to be able to comprehend it, especially if it's something I'm really interested in and I'm trying to learn. So you guys go subscribe to those magazines, keep them running. I'm going to start this podcast out with a funny. So I'm going to tell you something happened to me a couple of years ago, and I was actually at canine training yesterday. We're going to talk about that. And it brought it back up. It just kind of hit me while I was standing there watching one of the dogs. So it's been several years ago. I had just taken the job down here. I don't know. I'd probably been in here a year, maybe a year and a half. And, you know, learning a different area is tough sometimes. And you go into these different areas and neighborhoods and so on and so forth. But we had a pretty big domestic at one of our housing facilities. So roll up. I don't know. There's four or five of us, maybe six of us there. And after the call was done, now this call lasted probably an hour, hour and a half. After the call was done, I was walking back up the sidewalk, and I see this little boy, he's kind of pacing back and forth at my car. And I'm like, what's he doing? So I kind of ease around the driver's side, and I see him standing over on the sidewalk. He's just looking at my car at this point. So I walk around the back of my car and step up on the sidewalk, and he goes, "That's your car?" I'm like, "Yeah." He's like, "Is there a dog in there?" I'm like, "Yeah, man. He's always with me." He goes, "What'd he do?" And I'm telling you, I can't quit laughing at that. I was at training yesterday, and it hit me, and I bust out laughing. I know they're all looking at me like, "What in the you doing?" But yeah, man, he's like, "What'd he do?" No, man, he's my partner. He's with me all the time. He's all the time with me. But I still get a kick out of that. That's been probably 12, 13 years ago. But that boy was convinced that that dog was in trouble. He didn't care if it was a human in there. He just wanted to know if it was a dog in there. And I guess the big canine keep back kind of give it away. But anyway, start you out with that. Get a good laugh out of it anyway. So while we're talking about yesterday and canine training, talking about always learning, right? We should always be learning. We should always, you know, be willing to try new things. So yesterday, I kind of played a neutral role. So one of our handlers having an issue with the out, and some of you guys will understand that, some of you guys won't, but dog's got to out regardless. There's 1,000 ways to get him to out. And we had went through several of those 1,000 ways. And we actually caused some problems and a little bit of scarring. And when I say scarring, I mean mental, right? Probably too much compulsion, which drove the dog into a higher state. And we basically, I could see the dog's behavior changing about a month ago. And I said, listen, we got to go away from compulsion. This dog is about to his limit. And what that means is I could see in his behavior that the next thing he was going to do was lash out against a handler, right? So I just said, stop, take the E off, take the prong collar off. We're not using that stuff. We're going to figure out another way. So over the last month, I reach out to Jerry Bradshaw. I've had him on the podcast. Remember, I always say that don't be afraid to go ask questions and get information and get feedback from somebody. So I sent Jerry a couple some videos of training. Jerry sent me a text back and said, hey, do this, this, and this, which we had done, but we weren't consistent with it. So we did that again. And I mean, the dog's like snap, 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 just bam. He did exactly what we asked him to do without even halfway going through the process. The dog knew because we'd already done it before. So we take him out of that process and he goes right back to not wanting to let go. So we went and done another series of things that we thought would work. And Robbie has been training up in Northern Virginia with some guys. And if any of you guys have ever pulled with O'Malley, I know Ariel and I had a giggle the other day talking about, you know, O'Malley. But they're a different breed, and they love conflict. Like, it's like they live for it, really. Like, I'm going to push you until we can fight. Because that's just their temperament. That's their nature. And they're strong. When I say strong, I mean they're mentally tough, very tough. So yesterday we decided that Robbie had told him the training session before to try another method, which took basically all compulsion away. It took everything away from him, just basically standing there until he got tired of holding the toy and spit it out. And we spit it out, give him a new toy. So we put a timer on it. The first session, it took him a little over 9 minutes to spit. Rewarded him. And when we rewarded him, we changed the toys. And I know this is irrelevant to you guys, but we changed the toy a little bit with a softer toy. 20 plus minutes, dog was self-satisfying. He kept playing with the toy, gripping it, chewing it. So we decided, okay, we can't use that. So I went and got the same toy that he had on the first one, which was a black Kong. Kongs are different color. Different color code means different things. We used the black one. The black one is a little bit harder, and it has carbon in it like your tires do, so it's tough. The red Kong is a lot more chew. I mean, they can really put pressure on it, squeeze it down, so it's more fun for them. So I went and got him another Kong, and this Kong didn't have a rope in it. So we went back to the process, and I don't know, this one took half amount of time, probably 5-6 minutes. And anyway, after that exercise, we called it for lunch. And then after lunch, we come back and run the exercise 2 more times. And basically, we're just literally having the handler stand there until the dog says, this is no fun. I want to play. And the only way I can play is to come and get the toy. Give me the toy and me and you interact. Because when the rabbit goes dead, you remember Randy Hare talked about that? They want to go do something else, right? So when the rabbit goes dead, the dogs get bored. So we were using this against him. So in the evening session, the first session we did, like I'm telling you, the dog spit it out and was literally looking at the handler ready for him to give him the other toy so they could play. And that's another part of the equation is we were having the handler really, really amp up his play time and interaction when he was playing with the toy. Him and the dog. So he gave it to the dog. And we went to do the second session. The dog spit it. And the handler was very slow about rewarding the dog. in his mind, and we'd had this conversation, that he wanted to bring the dog down. He didn't want him excited, so he was going to do everything in kind of slow motion. Well, the dog rewarded itself by going back to the ground and picking up the toy he just had. So that set us back a little bit. So repeat, we did this, and took us a few more minutes, but then the dog started spitting again. Timing of the reward was so important, so important. But all we taught this handler is patience. That's it. He had to stand there with the dog on a lead, no pressure on the dog. And when I say no pressure, the lead had a big U in it. No pressure. Dog spits, you pay him, and you play. Like it is, it's a party on the end of that cone. Like it's a party. And so I had never used that method before. Robbie had used it in Northern Virginia at one of the schools he was up there doing. And when they asked me about it early that morning, I'm sitting there trying to process this. Okay. I get it. There's no compulsion. I know when I work for MSA, which is the explosive dogs in they send overseas, they kind of did the same thing, but they actually did a lift off with the dog. So anyway, I was kind of neutral. And yesterday evening, I was standing there in that last session, and I'm like, I'm really glad that I learned this. Like, this is another tool I can put in my toolbox. And with those dogs that are high drive, that want to push you and bring conflict, I've got another tool in my pocket. And it may take me a little bit more time to do it, but it's going to be super clean and it's going to be super easy to do this. All I got to do is be patient. So when we talk about learning, it was a new thing that I learned yesterday. And I know that doesn't pertain to the hound world, but it does. Patience goes a long ways. And while we're talking about patience, over the last couple of weeks, I'm not going to give out any names here, but I had a guy text me about a 9-month-old dog that he had shocked on the rig for off game. And I know we can get in the debate and the battle about, you know, if they've got it, it ain't going to hurt them, blah, blah, blah. But from a training aspect and standpoint, you've got a 9-month-old dog that is a puppy. He's a baby. And you're trying to teach him to rig a bear, per se. And he rigs on a deer, and you shock him. Or you use E or stem, however you want to say it. Well, it set that dog back. And the dog didn't even want to get back up on the rig because it was a bad experience. And you know, guys, you've heard me say this. I take mine down and put them on the ground. That's just me. Now, my older dogs, would I be afraid to do some corrections up there? Absolutely not. But I am not going to do it to my year and a half old, mommy, even my 2-year-old dog on top. I'm going to put them down and get them on the ground, right? So anyway, we had a conversation. I explained to him thought process, and he asked me what to do. The next day, the dog wouldn't do nothing. I said, put him back in. He was rigging out of the box. I said, put him back in the box. Build his confidence back up. He texted me the next day and said, bam, rigged out of the box. We treat the bear. Phenomenal. But just so you guys understand, 9 months old is a puppy, okay? Yes, you have some phenomenons in the hound world, and you've got dogs that catch on at 6-7 months old and never look back. But the majority of dogs are not that way. So walk easy, be easy, and be patient, right? Be patient. And another scenario that I had thrown up to me or asked about, had a pack of dogs running a bear, and they got in. I had to go back and read my message. They got into somewhere they shouldn't have been, or was getting ready to get into something that was they shouldn't have been at, dangerous maybe. And the handler, the owner, got in them pretty hard, and he said he had to get in them hard to get them to quit. Again, this is a young pack of dogs. This is not your seasoned, you know, 5- and 6-year-olds. This is a younger pack of dogs. And the last couple of times he's been out, it's been coons. Dogs won't fool with a bear. So I told him, be patient. Like, the dogs are confused. They've run bear. I don't know how many, but they've run bear. They've had a good time. And all of a sudden, you know, they're getting corrected for it. So the dogs are a little confused. And again, you got to lay that back into the groundwork. Does the dog understand E? Like, when you start stemming, does the dog understand when dad stems me, it's not because I'm doing X, Y, and Z. It's because I'm not listening to him. Right. So I had this conversation with maybe when I was in Canada. Like, the only time that I would ever stem my dogs on a bear is if they're getting ready to get into a major highway where I cannot prevent them from their safety, or into a dangerous situation. And I still don't want to do it then, but I would rather have to spend another month trying to get them lined back out than have a dog that was dead. So anyway, exact advice I gave him was walk easy, be patient with them. Do not stimulate them for anything until you get them lined back out. Even if they're making mistakes, let them make mistakes because they're confused. And people don't think that one time will harm a dog. Well, some dogs it won't. Some dogs are hard-headed. Some dogs have got that extra get up and go that you're not putting the slowdown on them. Again, I'm going to go back to the book that Lester Nance wrote. He was talking about putting one of his dogs on a fox. They were running fox after season went out in December, January. He put him on three or four fox, and they run them and called them and whatever. And he didn't think he would run them at night because the dog was pretty smart. And what was that dog? White River. Was it White River Ring? Maybe. But anyway, he actually took him out at night, and he said it took him a long time to get him off fox. And when he did get him off fox, it set him back. And I mean, that's back in the 20s and 30s, 1920s and 30s, guys. So, you know, we're still having the same issues that we had then. It's just we should be more savvy about it and have a lot more education. But anyway, I just want to throw that out there. The whole point of the training yesterday, the 9-month-old, the pack of dogs, is be patient. Things will fall back into line. You're going to have to let them make a few mistakes. If you have to let them make a few mistakes to get them lined back out, let them. That can all be corrected, but it's got to be corrected in the perfect timing. And back to Monday, timing is everything, right? Timing is everything. So hopefully that helps a couple of you out. All right, this topic has been brought up. I know that our good friend Fielder had it, talked about it. I know that Mr. Jason Doobie and Ross had this conversation on a podcast here a couple weeks ago. But let's talk about slick terrain, because ever since Canada, you know, my dogs actually slick treed, a couple of them did, and then Spook and Kate went on and ended up treeing a bear 45 minutes later. But my young dogs got hung up, and Nelson Cole and I was on last week, and we talked about the slick treeing thing a little bit. But this is what I think it finally like fell into place for me. So I'm going to equate this to some of the issues I have with my law enforcement, my canine training. Okay. We get picked apart in court over false indications. Your dog's falsing, right? That's what they say. Your dog's falsing. Well, dogs aren't trained to lie. What does that mean? That means it's either a training issue, 99% of the time it's a training issue, and the other percent of the time it's probably you. So how does my dog falsing on on search equate to slick trimming. So I'm going to break it down for you. When my dog falses on odor, so I've got a room to search, okay? So let's just take a classroom. Let's take a classroom. School, everybody's been in school. Everybody understands what a classroom, they can mentally put a picture together. You got your main door, you know, you got your teacher's desk, you got a bunch of other desks, you got a row of windows, you probably got two or three closets on the end, you got a TV sitting up in a corner, and then you got your chalkboard or your whiteboard, smart boards now. So we all know what a classroom looks like. So I bring my dog in and I start my pattern, my search pattern, in a clockwise. So I start at 12 o'clock and I run the dog around and the dog pops a squat on me. So that means for me that my dog finals. So my dog either goes into a lock and stare, goes into a sit, or, you know, we don't have aggressive dogs anymore, which is digging, scratching, barking. But so it's either locking up and staring or it sits. Okay. Now, that's an uncontrolled environment. And what that means is I don't know what's been in there. I don't know who's been in there or how long it has been since something has or has not been in there. So if my dog starts alerting more than 50%, I'm going to start doing some testing in training. So how do I set that up? So I go to a school, an old abandoned school, or I go to a school and I go in a classroom and I start running blanks. Blanks means no odor, nothing. I run a blank, dog doesn't alert. Then I go to the next room, I run a blank, dog doesn't alert. Go to the next room, run a blank, dog pops a squat. Most of the time, once you get in that third, fourth, or fifth room, the dog's timing out. What does timing out mean? That means the dog is sitting because your training has been set up where he's hitting odors in more rooms than he's not, and he's done search three or four or five rooms, and he hadn't hit odor, so he pops a squat, like, Dad, pay me, pay me. So how I control that is, I've got three ways of correcting this dog. There's no odor there, and I'm 100% sure there's no odor because I've set this up in a controlled environment. I've went into a classroom where I have not hid dope before that's been abandoned or empty. There's been no odor, active odor in there for months, or could even be years, depending on what schools we're using. So how do I work this out? I've got three options. Me personally, I like for the dog to self-discover. So that means I'm going to patiently, see how that works? I'm going to patiently wait him out. I'm going to stand, I'm going to get back into where my search pattern, where I want him to go next. He's got a 6-foot lead. I'm going to stand pretty much towards the end of that lead. And I'm going to sit there until he's like, this ain't paying me. I'm going to go do something else. Remember, dogs do what's best for them. So I'm going to wait the dog out, and the dog's going to self-discover. He's going to discover that there's no odor here, so this means nothing, and I'm not getting any fun out of it. Or I can assist the dog to move along, which means I ask the dog, Pino, let's get back to work. And I direct him with my hand to come to a pattern towards me. Or I can do a correction. Several ways we can do that. The lead, you can put tension on the lead and pull him out of odor. You can correct him with the lead, so on and so forth. I have actually seen people add stem to that too. But again, the dog has to understand what the stem's for. Not for setting. It's because you're not moving when Dad says let's move. Okay? You're not correcting the sit. You're correcting the ask when you asked and the dog did not perform. So that's the three ways. Self-discover, which is my preferred method. I learned that from the guys at HITS, you know, the handler instructor training seminar, Jeff Barrett and Andy. I learned that from them, and that was back in 13 or 14. Maybe it's 2014. I learned it from them, and I've been using it religiously since. I can assist him, which means basically coax him to move along, or I can do the correction numerous ways. Okay? All right, so let's go to the slick tree. All right, Heath, tell me how this pertains to the slick tree. The thing about the slick tree is, and after that conversation with Nelson, we don't know if there's odor there or not. The only thing we know is visually, we do not see the pursued game that we are chasing. We don't know that cat run up a fallen log, jumped 20 foot to the side of the tree, and went out to the furthest limb on the other side of the tree, which put him, you know, 50 yards from where the dogs hung up, right? We don't know that. We don't know, and I'm going back to Canada, I don't know that my dog, that bear that we were running, did not jump up on the side of the tree, give a good listen, and move on. As soon as he heard the dogs closing, bam, he's gone. Dogs come by tree, scent goes up, dog locks down. I don't know if those dogs and bear were bayed up there and he went up that tree, because this was the same scenario. It had a leaning tree, went up the leaning tree, bailed out, and kept on going. I don't know. See, the thing about scent is we can't see it and we can't smell it. The dog can smell it. So if I go to correcting my dog on a slick tree, a hard correction, how can I be 100% sure that that game was never there? Right? How can I be sure? And then I have to look at, how am I going to correct this? Am I going to self-discover, sit there until the dog decides to move on? Heck, man, some of these high-paired dogs that most of you guys are hunting, they may be there for days. Like, for real. Some of these tree dogs, man, they're not going anywhere. They're convinced it's there. They lock down. Are we going to assist them? I've done this method several times when I was coon hunting pretty hard. I would pull the dog off the tree, go 15, 20 yards. I'd cut the dog another direction. If he come back, I'd do the same thing. Or I would block the tree where he couldn't go back and see if he would go on. Or I can use the third method with a hard correction or some type of correction, some negative punishment, right? So the thing that really has been on my mind is I don't know the sense there. Yes, my dogs, over my 30-year career, I've had dogs tree up the trees you could probably push over, if I'm being honest about it. I mean, probably three or four, maybe more. I don't know. At least a handful. Well, why did that dog tree there? There's obviously nothing there. There's no branches on it. There's no top in it. What happened? Why did that dog lock down and get treed there? And then you look back to the training. You go back to the training. Okay. Did we use a lot of sight motivation? And I want to talk about that too. Did we use sight motivation? You know, did we do a lot of let the dog see a lot of animals running up trees? You know, what kind of dog do you have? You know, do you have a really hard tree dog? I mean, you know, when I say a hard tree dog, like a tree minded dog, more tree than track. So there's a lot of things that go into that situation that makes me think, makes me slow down, and it really makes me be a little bit more patient on how I handle those situations. Now, if I'm coon hunting, I just walked over how I've corrected that before. I pull the dog off the tree and I send them on. If they go back, I send them on. And then if they go back again, you know, I use some type of moderate or very little correction with that, because I don't want to correct them in odor. right? You correct the dog in odor, just like the guy did with the dogs running the bear. They were probably looking at it, honestly. But you correct the dog in odor, and then you cause a whole other set of problems. And those problems could be, you know, from few to a lot. So if you can't see the scent and you don't know what happened, how do you make the right determination on what to do? And that's why I err on the side of caution. I err on, you know, making them go on and seeing if they can circle out and find the track. With bear hunting, it's different. I've got 6 or 7 dogs at a tree that's slick, and I walk 20, 30, 40 yards away. Like, it's hard. You got a handful of dogs, and you got 2 or 3 that you're trying to figure it out. It makes for a handful, right? I'll tell you a quick story about a little female we had and working the source, because I feel like this plays into it. So I had a little pit bull named Layla, little old white female. Man, she was on point. But if I walked her into that classroom and she smelt odor, as soon as she smelt odor, she set. So what do you mean, Heath? You walk her into the threshold, you put her in a doorway, she throw that nose up in the air, and if she smelt odor, she'd sit right there and you couldn't hardly get her to move. So was she wrong? She was not at source. The source could have been, in fact, one time that she did this, of course, we had a pretty good amount of odor in a back closet all the way across the classroom. I could not get her past the teacher's desk. Was she wrong? No, she was not wrong. Her nose smelt odor. Her job was to smell odor and sit. It was a training issue with her going to source. And it took us a good month or more to get her to move to source, to get her to go. So I had to downsize odor where she would work it. And even with me downsizing odor, if it was, you know, 10 feet away, she'd still final, and then get her, you know, try to get her to move in and find the source. So she wasn't wrong. So when our dogs miss like that, or they don't have it, are they wrong? Like, how can you be 100% sure when we can't smell it? And after Nelson and I's conversation, after listening to a couple podcasts, after it happened to me in Canada. I didn't have it happen last year, but the year before, I think my dogs got caught up on a tree, a couple of them. Yeah. So it's not happening a lot, right? I mean, it happens maybe once a year, could be once every other year. It's not enough for me to fret about it, but it's also something that I think about constantly. And what's the correct way to fix that? So just throwing that out there, self-discovery, let the dog figure it out. If the dog figures it out on his own, even though it takes him 45 minutes, you just saved yourself a month worth of training with assisting him. Because you keep assisting him, the dog can start looking to you for the answers. So I want my dogs to self-discover. I'm going to give them plenty of time to do that. We're going to talk, you're going to hear me say in the podcast next week, I interview Inga Nell, and she hunts leopards in Botswana. And we talk about self-discovery in one of her hunts. We discuss it. It's pretty interesting. So anyway, just food for thought. Thought I'd throw it out there. Thought you guys would listen to it. So really quick, I want to give you a rundown with the puppies. The puppies are 7 weeks old now. I have done a little prey drive testing with the flirt pole, and I have actually laid their first track. We are still continuing to imprint odor, and we've changed it up a little bit. I talked to Lewis and got his opinion. I was doing it that way anyway. I just want to make sure that I was doing it correctly. Again, I'm asking, you know, I want to know if I'm missing something, or is there another way or a better way? So I've laid their first track. The pups started off very slow, and the wind changed. And I'm telling you, I'll drop the video the week that this podcast airs. The wind changed and those dogs went from kind of trying to see what was on the ground to bam, full explosion mode. Crazy, crazy, crazy. So they weren't 7 weeks old when that happened. So I've laid the first track. But I see a lot of videos with people using hides as drags and stuff. And I've done it too. So I'm not excluding me from this this conversation. I've done it too. And yes, of course I've tweaked things, and with my knowledge in the law enforcement world, I am a huge proponent on the dog using his nose and not his eyes. And I see a lot of people, you know, using the hide. My puppies, like I said, they're 7 weeks old. They've seen the hide twice. Okay. At 5.5 weeks old, I tested them. You would not believe the difference in a week and a half that it's made. I tested them again, and I don't really think that I need to show them, you know, test them much anymore. I'll probably do it again at 8 weeks and maybe again at 10 or 12. So they'll see it four times. But if I use that hide, I'm going to put it where they can't see it and make them find it with their nose instead of doing everything visual, visual, visual. So when I do my drags and stuff, there'll be odor on the ground and it'll be up a tree just like it was. And they won't have that opportunity to see it more than, like I said, more than four or five times. So go back to the slick treeing. If you're using this method, if you're using a lot of sight-oriented methods, okay, if you're showing your dog a lot of game, and I'm going to go back to the coon hunters here. If you're showing your dogs a lot of coons visually, then you are susceptible to having some of these issues because the dog's not having to work through problems with his nose. So the easiest thing for him to do is get parked. And when he gets parked, again, it brings up the whole situation. Was there odor here? Was there not odor here? Did that animal go up the tree and jump, bail, come up on the side, jump off? We don't know. A thousand scenarios could have played out, right? Or did the dog just say, this is too complicated, I can self-reward by treeing at this tree, dad's going to come and get me? And even if you give a hard correction at that tree, it's still attention, right? I'm going to get my attention. You give that dog negative attention, it's still attention, right? And then you start classical conditioning, a whole nother issue. So be mindful. Like I said, this is a way. It's not the way. It's things that I've learned over my hound career. And the police dogs brought a lot of this stuff up with odor and using their eyes. And the reason that I pay more attention to it now is because a lot of the pointy-eared dogs, your Dutchies, your Mallies, the Shepherds aren't as bad, but they are very sight-driven. And that's from a lot of prey drive exercises when they're younger and giving them, and not balancing that out. So anyway, next week, like I said, we're going to have on Inga. She was a great guest. You're going to learn all about hunting in Botswana with hounds. It was a great, great conversation and interview with her. So I hope that all you guys join us next week here on What's Up Wednesday. Do you like to be outdoors like I do? If so, unlock the wilderness with Onyx Maps. It is your ultimate guide to exploring, hunting, and conquering the great outdoors. With detailed maps, real-time tracking, and exclusive access to public and private lands, Onyx Maps is your key to adventure. Discover the possibilities and never get lost again with Onyx. So subscribe today using the promo code K920, letter K, number 920, and know where you stand.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.